Cape Talk DIY.
DIY segment this afternoon, and it's a very good afternoon to you. If you have any queries or questions in terms of geysers, if you've had a geyser burst recently, or if you've had a problem with your geyser, somebody came to come and install it and you weren't happy with it, give us a call, 021-446-0567 and 072-567-1567. We've got in studio with us Lee Goldie at Drips Plumbing. A very good afternoon. Welcome, Lee.
And a good afternoon too.
It's just been impersonating me selling paint somewhere, and he knows that. We're also chatting to Paul Hawthorne, Managing Director at Quick Art Geysers. Paul, a very good afternoon, and welcome to Cape Talk.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to start off with Paul, because this is actually a question in terms of geysers. How long should I expect my geyser to last? Because geysers are installed. I know that geysers have a specific number on them, so when you phone your insurance, you quote that number, and it gets tracked from there, that the warranty and stuff gets there. How long can I expect my geyser to last?
That's a good question. It's a question we get asked on a kind of a weekly basis. I think what people need to understand when you buy a geyser is that you spend 5,000 Rand on a device which gives you hot water, and we give you a guarantee card, and we never get those guarantee cards back because people just pay the money and they forget about it. It's become a grudge purchase. You buy it, you forget about it. What you need to understand is that it's like a motor vehicle. You need to service it. You need to look after it if you expect anything to last. So there's a unit in there called an anode. It's a sacrificial anode. It's called a sacrificial anode because it's a weaker metal. It's magnesium, and it gives a piece of itself to patch a hole like a plaster, basically, on the inside of the geyser. So your geyser is under pressure. Your little hairline cracks in the glass lining. That anode sacrifices itself and it patches the hole. The problem comes if you don't check your anode, which we recommend as a manufacturer every 2 to 3 years, service the geyser, especially before winter, and check at the anode. It's a metal rod, and if more than half of it is perished, then you must replace it. If you don't replace the anode and it can't eat the anode, then it's going to eat the sidewall of the geyser, in which case your geyser is going to last 3 years. So to answer your question, you must service the geyser, you must look after it. It's like a motor vehicle. You mustn't forget about it.
Mm. Explain to us how a geyser is built, because you see this big thing coming on a bucky, and Lee and them come and they come and install it, but you very seldom understand how this thing works.
Yeah, I think people, they see it and they know what it does, but they don't really understand the dynamics. I think you're quite right. The biggest thing with a geyser really is that, because you've got a glass lined tank, and say you have an anode, and, obviously that geyser, it takes a certain while to heat depending on the size and the size of the element. So people need to take that into cognizance when they design a system. Especially if you look at a guest house or a Holiday Inn, or they want water on demand and they want water now. The sizing of the geyser is very important, but the geyser itself, our geysers are galvanized. They've got ceramic inside. And better plumbing practice for us is you take all the pipework that comes to and from the geyser and you lag those pipes, which is equivalent of a geyser blanket for your pipes. But the geyser itself, it's got an element and a thermostat. You set the temperature. The minimum at the moment is 60 degrees as law. Otherwise you get Legionnaire's disease and you get all the bacteria that grows in there. And then your element. And, obviously it's not a hell of a tricky thing if you're a plumber and you've been through your proper qualifications to design that system so that it works and it lasts.
Mm. How can I prolong the life of a geyser? Because we've got a WhatsApp message that's just come in now. It says, Quick Art geysers are all cheap and only last for 5 years, and it cannot handle the pressure like copper geysers, Tecron. Is this a fact or is this a myth?
No, it's a myth, especially on the pressure side. Quickot was 600 kPa. We've now come down to 400 kPa in line with solar legislation. Mm. The copper guys have just come up to 400 kPa in the last 3 or 4 years. They were all 100 kPa, all gravity fed, if you can remember. So pressure, not at all. The thing is, again, it hits that point of that geyser. If you look after it, it will last. If we take our ex-MD that lived here in Cape Town, his geyser is 13 years old. And he replaces the anode and it lasts because you look after it. So it comes really, we don't design it to fail, but if you don't look after it, it's like if you buy a brand new Toyota Corolla and you don't service it at 15,000 Ks, if you walk into Toyota at 40,000 Ks and you shout and scream at them, they're going to ask you for your service history. We don't look at it as a part of our warranty. It bursts with any company that comes out day and night and we will give you a new one. But when we explain to the homeowner, if you don't want to see me again in 2 years' time, please replace the anode. Phone us if you've got a question. But please, you need to look after it. And if people do that, it will last.
Mm. And how do I prolong the life of the geyser? Because At the end of the day, a lot of people will say to you, with electricity, you know, electricity is very expensive. They tend to switch it off. They tend to put a timer on the geyser, which switches on and off. You know, those are all the myths that are going around. I've actually done the experiment leaving the geyser on, because it drops below a certain temperature. It will just refill that 2 or 3 degrees that it normally needs to. And I haven't seen a massive sort of change in electricity usage. Lee, have you noticed that?
Yeah, look, let me jump in here. I think that Paul's quite correct. The most important thing about a hot water cylinder is it's got to be installed correctly. I've always said that a compliant installation is a robust installation. When I see a compliant installation is done as per the bylaw, as per South African National Standards 10254, that's the standard. If that is done to the letter of the law, it usually is a robust system that's going to last you much longer than anything that's non-compliant. Saying that, there are some simple ideas, and that's changing the sacrificial anode and just having it serviced every 2 or 3 years.
Mm. What's a message coming in on that, actually? My mom has had the same geyser for over 40 years.
Indeed.
I'm sure you'd like to go and see this geyser. I think it's a copper geyser. What maintenance should be done on that, Alistair? On a copper geyser 40 years old, what does maintenance should be done on that?
Really, you don't have to do much maintenance. I think the thickness of the copper in those days are very generous, and they were designed to last. And the only maintenance really that you had to do on an old copper geyser is to replace the thermostat and the element, depending on how much traffic there was through that geyser.
Oh. We've got a call, another WhatsApp message coming in from a person on the WhatsApp line, 0725671567. If you'd like to join the conversation, we're chatting geysers this afternoon. Paul, this one says, I like to turn my geyser on and off when I need to save on electricity. I'm sometimes worried that this will damage the geyser over time. What is the risk in this? Is there a risk involved?
There's no risk on the components. You know, your element and thermostat is designed to switch on and off as you use, you know, in terms of your consumption. If you use hot water, the thermostat registers if it goes below that level, and it fills it up. And, it, you know, it obviously then switches the element on and you get hot water again. I think it all depends on usage in terms of if you're going to switch it on and off. You know, if you take a kettle as an example, you boil that kettle, you take one cup of coffee out of that kettle, you come back 10 minutes later, and you then top up that kettle and you reboil it. It's going to reboil a lot faster than if you empty the kettle and refill the entire kettle. The same process when it comes to a geyser. If you're two people showering and you're going to use 60 liters of hot water, the geyser will only switch on and reheat that 60 liters you've used. If you switch it off, you're now heating 150 liters. So if you're a big family of four and you go through the shower and you find yourself when the water runs cold by the time you've finished, worth having a timer. Mm. If you're a single person or you're two people and you don't experience that, generally just leave it to do its own thing. And the thermostat will obviously then switch on when it needs to.
Yeah.
Or put a timer on it. So.
I'm going to jump yeah. in here just to say that an important thing to note, and Paul and I were discussing it early on, is that a lot of people turn their geysers off at the DB, the distribution board.
Yes.
Now, that technically is not a switch. That is not something that you can turn off and on every day as if it was a light switch.
Yes.
It's designed as a circuit breaker. And what you need to be doing, if you are deciding to turn the geyser on and off manually, that is to find a switch which is more than likely located next to the geyser. If your geyser's in the roof, I'm afraid that's just the way it is. Try avoid the circuit breaker type of on-off activity.
Or put a timer on the geyser, because there are specific geyser timers manufactured and made for this.
Quite correct.
You know, what are the signs that my geyser is not working optimally? What should I be looking for?
I think, Paul, you would know.
Obviously, if you break down the components there, you know, if your electricity trips, it's your element. If you've got boiling hot water coming out of your TP valve or the valve at the top of the hot water side of your geyser, boiling hot water, then your thermostat is faulty. And obviously, then if you get brown water in your geyser, it means your anode is gone. You haven't checked that anode, and now the sidewall of the geyser is coming apart, in which case that what we term a burst geyser, or a geyser that needs to be replaced. So there are signs. You get cold water coming out of the hot. You could have back pressure. Your installation could not be up to compliance. You could, you know, obviously have something that's missing in that installation, something that's gone faulty. So normally plumbing is all literal terms. We use a pressure control valve, reduces the pressure. Why? Because the geyser has a maximum pressure. You can't put what you want into it. If you take a 500 ml Coke, you can't put a liter of Coke in a 500 ml Coke. Why? Because that's the way it's designed. So I think when it comes to geysers, people miss the fact that that it has to be done, and the SANS compliancy rules aren't done so we can sell more geysers. They aren't done for any other reason than it's a safety device. Mm. You know, you bring that thing into your home. If something should go wrong, obviously it causes damage. Nobody wants that. If you do it right and you do it with the right plumber and you do it by the code, there's telltale signs before something goes dramatically wrong. But generally, yeah, I mean, I think in wintertime, people use more hot water, so elements and thermostats are bound to go a little bit more. And then again, you know, we can't hop on enough. You need to take an opportunity in that life cycle of that geyser to open it up every 2-3 years and empty all the muck out, clean it out, do a good service. There's a basic gasket for 15 Rand, 20 Rand retail. Replace the gasket, just check the thing. You wouldn't drive to Namibia today if you hadn't serviced your car in 3 years. No. You would take it to a mechanic quickly and say, just check the brakes, please. You know, I need to just make sure this thing's safe for my family. People unfortunately neglect that. You know, now you add a solar panel and a heat pump and these other devices that carry gas or, you know, glass panels. The last thing you want to do is not have it done according to the right spec. So it's very important from a manufacturer's end that the plumber that buys that product from one of our retailers does it the right way.
Chatting about geysers this afternoon, and the gentleman sitting in front of me has got a bit of, you know, questions, and they've got all the answers for you. All you need to do is you need to give us a call on 021-446-0567, or you can chat to us on the WhatsApp line 072-567-1567. It is the one thing in your home that gives you grey hairs, because it catches you totally unaware when this geyser bursts in the middle of the night. First thing when you come home from work, you find your home, you know, full of water and stuff like that. Does a solar heater have one of these sacrificial anodes fitted into it?
In fact, a solar geyser's got two anodes in it. For the reason that it's outside. You know, we've always adopted that thought of having two anodes in the system. You know, and an anode, if we talk about this anode, just for the people to understand at home, it's not an expensive thing to fix. To get a registered plumber to come in and replace it for you, looking at just over 1,000 Rand, it's not going to bankrupt you. And, you know, retail, they're not going to cost you more than probably 100 Rand or so. And there's only four sizes that we sell. So, you know, it's not something that's never out of stock. And, you know, plumbers in the market that have adopted this approach and gone and done a little bit of homework and educated the homeowners, we see the results. We as a company put 32,000 geysers into the market. We're not selling enough anodes. So we can see that education there isn't with the homeowner. We should be selling.
It's a great peace of mind product, isn't it? I mean, we must confirm that this is for steel geysers, and these are enamel lined steel geysers as opposed to copper geysers.
Chatting this afternoon to Lee Goldie at Drips Plumbing and Paul Hawthorne, Managing Director at Quickot Geysers. Your thoughts, your calls, 021-446-0567. We had a call in from John in Glen Ken, commenting on geyser systems. John, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you, and thanks for taking my call. Just a quick question. The geyser Y system, can you comment on it or explain or give us the ups and downs of a system like that?
Geyser Y is obviously, it's very well known. They've done very well in the market. It's a very clever device. It's a troubleshooting device, for want of a better term. It has a timer function in it, and then it will tell you if you've got scale buildup. It will tell you if your anode needs replacing. It's a hell of a smart tool, and something definitely worthwhile putting in if you have a solar system and you're going to invest that large capital into a big system on the roof. Definitely something worth looking at. It's accepted norm in the market if you have those systems. Obviously, it's not under the Quickot umbrella, but any major retailer will sell it, and I think most of the bigger plumbers in the market are fair with it. So definitely in terms of a device as a solar system or any really just a normal geyser, a fantastic product, yeah.
Thanks very much, John. John in Glen Cairn comments on geyser systems there. Chatting this afternoon to Lee Goldie. Lee, factors to consider when installing or buying a new geyser: size, you know, the KPA, should it be horizontal, vertical? What is the pressure like? What are those factors that you need to consider before, if your geyser's blown and maybe you want to buy a better one?
Well, you're very spoiled for choice. I think if you are insured, I think it's a like-for-like arrangement with your insurance company. But if you start going to an area where you're doing a renovation, I think you should get the advice of a suitably qualified person, somebody who can assess your system, its needs, its wants, the pressure that you desire. And with that sort of information, you're armed. And then you can go to market and you can choose various systems, whether they be solar, whether they be internal or external. And, you know, so you need to get to know a plumber and preferably one who's registered with the Institute of Plumbing South Africa.
I think these days you need to get a plumber, know your plumber better than what you know your doctor or your lawyer.
Indeed. Yeah,
sure. Just to touch on the point there of sizing, you know, obviously we work on a rule of thumb that, you know, people lie in a bath and then you top it up with more hot water. You would obviously then, you know, if you're going to buy a geyser for a family of four, the accepted norm is a 150 liter. When you buy solar, you must always remember to go one size bigger because the element now lies in the middle of the geyser. It can only heat what's above it. So a common misconception in the market is people, when they replace their normal standard electric geyser with a solar, is they buy the same size. They must actually buy one size bigger. And then in terms of pressures, you must just look at the taps you're going to run. If you're going to run mixer taps, you need high pressure. That's a mistake people often make. They buy fancy taps, that, you know, because it looks nice, and then they've got a gravity-fed geyser and it doesn't work.
Yeah, I think that's one of the key factors when you've got the mixer taps. Obviously, it's hot and cold water being mixed, and you need extra pressure on that particular tap, whereas you've got your hot water and cold water separately, it actually doesn't matter. We've got two voice notes, one voice note on electric efficiency and the other one on faulty geyser. We take a listen to that.
I've heard all sorts of stories as to what the most electricity efficient means of managing your geyser is. Everything from people saying, no, you need to leave it on constantly, then it uses less electricity, to others saying, no, turn it off most of the time, only turn it on an hour or so before you need it. That uses less electricity. From the expert's perspective, what is the most efficient way of saving electricity using a geyser and obviously also having the best impact on its lifespan, Gary in Harfield Village?
There we go. Gary.
I think I've got the answer for you, Gary. Mm. I heard it once before and it said that the most efficient usage of hot water is don't use it at all. But, okay, let's be real. I think there's an element to understanding that the less hot water you use, the less electricity you use, the more efficient your system is. But it really does come down to your usage and, of course, to make sure that you have the right graded geyser. And I think Paul can expand on that. It's with
regards. I think if we look at our arsenal as how the company and the market has evolved, you know, there's bylaws now that 50% of your hot water has to be provided by heat pump, solar and gas. And we see so many of these products in the market and they install badly and that people sell you the wrong, you know, message that you're going to save 50%. And really, the most efficient system in the market is a gas geyser in terms of cost efficiency, or you do a heat pump and solar together. But once you add another component that's going to add hot water into your system, that's going to come at a lower rate, obviously then you start saving money immediately. So as a heat pump, it costs 2/3 less electricity to run a heat pump shower in the dark, if you want to, as an example. You know, the basic geyser 150 is about 16 rand, a heat pump about 4 rand shower in the dark. So although these products are expensive to buy and put in, there are bylaws in place that if you build new, you can't avoid it, and it's for good reason. You know, we're all under pressure with electricity. We don't want to add more pressure onto it. So, and these products aren't, you know, they're not too complicated to understand, and you'll see saving immediately. When it comes to solar, obviously you must design it correctly. And again, you know, you can get systems that will work. We have low pressure systems that have no element in thermostat, and they get hot water every day because it's a vacuum tube technology. So, you know, obviously I think if you want to, you can, you'd rather go on our website, go through that, and we'll help you a little bit better because it's such a wide topic. We could talk the whole day, but there are ways of curbing that means, and you've got to look outside of the normal standard electric geyser.
Chatting this afternoon to Lee Goldie at Drips Plumbing and Paul Hawthorne, Managing Director at Quickart Geysers, and we're chatting about the biggest headache that you must have had somewhere along the line, and that is a geyser. Just chatting to Lee very quickly. Lee, a question on the WhatsApp line from Hazel in Glen Ken. Do geysers have to be drained when they are being replaced, and how does one go about doing this safely? And I think also, how do you go about saving the water?
Hazel, to answer your question, it's usually 150 liters or 200 liters. Everybody wants to save water. We're in that habit right now. So there's a couple of systems out there that are available. And if you use the plumber who is most suitable for the job, He does have a system whereby he harvests the water out of the geyser and replaces it back into the system. I think there is a system called WaterPack.
We make use of it, yeah.
And a Quickhot Electrox makes use of it. We make use of it in our company. And it's quite simply is remove the water from the geyser before replacing it or servicing it or whatever you're doing with it, and then pump it back into the system once you complete. There's 200 liters or 150 liters saved. Fantastic.
Yeah, we actually carry big enough bladders to do big industrial boilers. We've got 1,000-liter bladders. We've got 500-liter bladders. The only time we won't return that water into the system is if, obviously, the water's gone brown. Mm. But generally, yeah, we've done, and we've been using it for 9 months, and it's part of our indemnity that our plumbers have to use it.
Hazel in Glencairn, I hope that answers your question. 0214460567 if you want to chat about your geyser problems. 0725671567. Got a voice note on the WhatsApp line.
Graham phoning from Noordhoek. I understand that on the market there is a contrivance which will close off the water supply if your geyser becomes faulty and so-called bursts so that your house doesn't get flooded. Is that right?
That's quite right. There is a product called WERD. It's W-E-R-D. It's designed and sourced from a company in the northern suburbs. What it does is it's got a sensor in the drip tray. And when the water leaks, that sensor in the drip tray registers the leak, and the arm actually comes across and it switches off any water supply coming in and out of the geyser. So, you know, Lee obviously would probably be able to dabble a little bit more because I'm sure he's used it, but it's in our showroom. We endorse it as a Quickhot thing in terms of, you know, obviously you can come and have a look at there, but that product is probably the best one in the market there.
Automatic leak detection. I think that, you know, one just Googles that, and I think a couple of products come up, a couple of nifty products that sometimes rely on electricity, some on batteries, and some even without. So happy Googling.
What happens when a geyser bursts?
It's not a traumatic explosion of a geyser, as people usually make out. Mm. It usually starts off slow. And fortunately, that's why we have safety trays, geyser drip trays, and those extend to the exterior. And keep a good eye out on those safety pipes, and that'll tell you that there's a problem. And just make sure, of course, that you have a safety tray, but that's part of compliancy. So ensure that your system's compliant, ensure that your plumber advises you whether your system's compliant, and you can avoid a big problem later.
What happens if my geyser is installed and a couple of months later it just bursts again? And you have other problems, and you have additional problems on the piping and things like that, and it hasn't been. Is there a body that I can complain to in terms of plumbing?
I think it goes straight to guarantees and warranties, and I think Paul can expand on
obviously,
that.
You know, if we attend to a warranty call, we would look at the installation to make sure it's SANS compliant. If it's not SANS compliant, the homeowner is made aware of it immediately. They sign an indemnity to make sure that they have a company or like a paper record of it. And we advise them, you know, in terms of the danger, we're either not allowed to leave, we must fix it now, or this obviously will cause an issue down the line. Please, it's not up to code, you need to replace it. But, yeah, I think, as you say, if you do those things and everything's over the drip tray, as Lee says, the leak and the damage, but you're not going to see a geyser explode unless you blank off the safety valve and you do your own MacGyver. Yeah. But it shouldn't happen. You know, it's happened twice in the time I've been a Quickhot in 14 years.
Talking to Jean or Jean in Greenpoint, you're questioned for the two gentlemen in studio. Good afternoon to you and welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have a drip tray which is about 50 by 50 centimeters and 6 centimeters deep. I was horrified when I first moved into this complex to find that the pipe from the drip tray was not even sealed and properly connected. However, what size should a drip tray be? And in a complex, who's responsible for repairing or replacing a geyser? Is it the unit owner or the managing agent through the body corporate?
Thanks very much for that call. Quickly, Paul?
If it's your own flat, you're responsible. If you're renting, then normally the body corporate would have a way that they would like it to be done. Body corporates also need to understand that they need to adhere to national regulations. And if the national regulation says you need an overflow, they need to have an overflow. They need to accommodate you. Obviously, a little bit more difficult for the older geysers. There's also vent systems to the roof you can use. There's quite a different way of doing it. But, drip trays, it all depends on the size of the geyser. As long as all the confines of the the things that can leak in terms of the valves and the vacuum breakers and the things around it can leak into the drip tray. We do vertical trays, and we do 100-liter trays specifically for 100-liter and so on and so on. So it depends on the size of the geyser, really, and a quick answer for you.
And that's Lee Goldie at Drips Plumbing. Thank you for your time this afternoon.